Hey there, listeners. Just a quick announcement. Ever since episode 18, where we covered the Yaw, we've gotten a lot of good feedback, and after a bit of thought, we've decided that from now on, we're going to ditch the dusty old world of innovative indie tabletop roleplaying and become a full-time video game podcast. So strap on your Xbox and jump into your PlayStation, because this week, we're reviewing Crash Bandicoot.
Hello, and welcome to Parallel Lives. I'm Hugh, I've kidnapped Wednesday and Charles and locked in the basement along with everyone else and taken over the podcast. I'm here today with my good friend E.T. Say hello, E.T.
Hello, E.T.
And we're here to talk about Follow, a new game still in development by Ben Robbins. Ben Robbins, the creator of Microscope and Kingdom, which were played respectively in the zeroth and first episodes of this podcast, I think. Unless I've got the order wrong, I wasn't around back then. But now that my new regime is in charge, E.T., why don't you introduce yourself and tell us something about what kinds of tabletop games you like to play?
Okay, well, hi, my name is E.T., and I generally like to play GM-less, prep-less tabletop games. I like narrative-heavy games, especially games that focus on role-playing. So Follow is actually a really fun game for me, but I think I'm getting a little ahead of myself here.
Like you mentioned, Follow is a GM-less, narrative-heavy role-playing game. So you've played quite a bit of this game, and it's actually through your arrival and intervention that I had the privilege of playing it, along with another group of gamers who couldn't be here for this podcast. And I liked it enough, I thought we should record a podcast about it. So I'm sort of struck off on my own. This is a Wildcat podcast. But anyway, why don't you tell us about this game?
Sure. Yeah, I'm really glad to hear you liked it. Follow is a game about team unity and family. It's a game about telling a story about a team and seeing where that leads. And really what it is actually about is telling a three-act story about a team and seeing whether the team gets to stay together and complete their quest by the end of the story. By meeting or failing to meet three challenges. And throughout the game, you get to see loss and betrayal, but you also get to see things like really intense interactions that lead to greater team unity. It's a really fun way to tell stories about found families.
You want to talk a little bit more about the mechanical setup of the game. So we start off by picking something that's like a playset, sort of like in Fiasco.
Right. So like, you're going to start off picking from a number of possible quests, and a quest is just a kind of story to tell where you have a very specific goal, and these quests are structured around different kinds of team-based stories. So a couple of examples are the heist and the rebellion and the posse, and in the posse you act as like a group of cowboys who are trying to find an outlaw, and in the rebellion you're a group of rebels who are trying to overthrow an oppressive regime. And so you choose from one of these sorts of playsets, and then you go from the provided playset to telling more of your own personal story. And you can reskin the playset. So, for example, I played the Rebellion. When we played the Rebellion, we played fourth graders who were rebelling against fifth graders. Or you can play it really straight and you can just play the playset as is. And the mechanics for that are basically just like choose the thing and then choose from options on the sheet.
So the game plays out in what would be a familiar structure for players of a lot of storytelling games, and you pick the playset, you establish some characters, you establish some relationships between the characters, and then you act out scenes. The main structural mechanic of this game is a series of challenges, each which, according to the rules, should be drawn from your playset. Can you go ahead and tell us a little bit more about how the challenges work and how you play out scenes to go along with each challenge?
Yeah, sure. Each of the quests or the playsets poses a set of challenges to the players, and then the players can pick from these challenges and pitch them based on which ones they think should be or would be useful to telling the story that they're trying to tell. And so you choose one at first, and then whichever player pitched that challenge is the player who gets narrative control over that challenge. And what that really means is that they get to detail what is required of the team for them to meet the challenge, and some of the details surrounding the challenge, so that when players start to play scenes, they know they have a basis for what to base their scenes off of and what might be interesting to talk about in their scenes and address. And the way that the team meets the challenges is by each player setting a scene that moves the plot forward or moves characters forward towards meeting the challenge that they've set up for themselves. And so each player will detail a scene that involves one of their characters. And I think one of the things that's interesting about this game is that you don't just have one character as a player. You have two different characters, one who is a major character, and that's your character that you're going to spend a little bit more time developing, and one who's a minor character, and that character is just sort of a concept with a name. But honestly, every time I've played, we've had some major and minor character switch-ups, and the main character becomes the minor character, and the minor character becomes the main character. Because, you know, you discover things that are interesting about that character, and you decide you want to explore that instead.
That, like all things in this game, is relatively loose. The rules themselves don't give you much strict direction about how much you use your major character versus your minor character, and so on. Rules themselves don't tell you much more than play out a sequence of scenes. The rules come into play, though, when the series of scenes is finished and you're trying to decide whether or not you've met the challenge. The sets of scenes that you play for each challenge are themselves totally freeform. There's no specific rules really about how you should play, other than a general storytelling game, yes and sort of style of gameplay. And anyone who's familiar with games of this genre will find that pretty familiar. The challenges of playing out scenes like this are, I think, if you're a listener to this podcast, reasonably well understood. Sometimes it's tough to set the scene. Sometimes it's tough to figure out what you're going to do in the scene. Sometimes it's tough to make the scene interesting or meaningful, given whatever particular combination of characters or events you actually settle on. But that's not a problem unique to this game. What is unique to this game, however, are the mechanics that move the game from one challenge to another.
So when a challenge is finished, which happens when each of the players has played a scene to their satisfaction for each of one of their characters, you reach an ending point and you narrate a build-up to a climax. And before you get to decide whether your team was successful at meeting the challenge or not, you actually engage in a voting mechanic that will lead to a random outcome, and that outcome will decide for you whether you guys have succeeded or not. This voting mechanic is basically you as a player will cast two different kinds of votes. First, you'll cast a vote by answering a series of questions about how your character feels about the path that your team has taken. And then you'll actually answer another question about how you as a player feel about the team and whether you think that they did what needed to be done to succeed at the challenge. There's a two in-character questions, and then there's an out-of-character question. And those will come together to contribute to the odds that your team has of succeeding at your challenge.
Yeah, you vote, and the votes contribute to a random outcome, but it's based on both randomness and your votes.
Which I think is pretty elegant.
Yeah. Now, this voting mechanic, let's talk about it for a second, because the combination of voting and randomness is something that gives the resolution of each challenge and the twists that arise from it, I think, a good bit of credibility. At least for my part, this is a problem that I've had with a lot of other similar storytelling games, Durance or Fiasco being good examples, where the mechanics add elements to the story, but those elements seem like they're sort of arbitrary or totally unjustified, or in the case of Fiasco, sometimes counterproductive. In Durance, there's a mechanic where you roll a number of dice, and if the dice all come up the same value, a big major plot twist occurs. Follow has a much smoother version of that, where plot twists of a kind, occur in the interact resolution of one challenge and the opening of the next. And they occur on the basis of the player votes and some randomness. Now, for my part, that reminds me of what I thought was the most elegant mechanic of the Murder of Mr. Crow, that the outcome of the game was in part based on voting on which outcome the players as a whole liked the most. And I think this game does a good job of incorporating that sort of voting mechanic multiple times throughout a larger plot structure. And I think that really adds something interesting to the game.
It's a voting mechanic that I have grown to like a lot. I started out finding it to be a little harsh. And then as I grew to understand the game better, it was definitely something that became much more interesting to me in terms of the way that it allows you to tell your story. Because it starts out and it seems like, man, it's really easy to lose because the mechanic of the game allows you basically one chance to win or lose the challenge. And that seems really harsh at the beginning. But at the end, when you're like looking at like, oh, did we tell a good story? Whether you win or lose the challenge, you end up telling a really good story. And it gives you the opportunity as a player to really contribute to that outcome. And I think the most interesting stories that you end up getting to tell are the stories where not all of the players agree on whether the team is actually doing well. It really gives you an opportunity also to take a pulse of where all the players are at and to take that moment to pause and say, how are we feeling about the story that we're telling? So I really appreciate it as a way of even if you're not interested in the storytelling mechanic, just a way of taking the pulse of the room and taking the pulse of the way that we want the story to be going. And I think to some extent it does force you to be honest about the kind of story that you're telling, which I really appreciate as well.
Right.
I do appreciate the twist aspect of it, which you touched on really briefly. In Follow, one of the mechanics actually requires you to lose a character if you get a certain outcome, actually two outcomes. And those losses can be exceedingly interesting narratively, especially if you're willing to take the story in some very unexpected directions.
Right. And like all things of this game, when it says that you're required to lose a character, this simply gives you a opportunity in which the rules instruct you to narrate the loss of one of the characters from the party into the story at this point, at this pivotal point, at the resolution or failure of one of these challenges. Now, that's a neat way of coupling what should be a sort of dramatic moment given the characters and the role-playing that you've done onto a larger story arc that's structuring the whole game. And that's basically it. Other than that, there's an epilogue. When the game is over and you've either succeeded or failed the last challenge, everybody narrates their character's life afterwards in a manner that's probably pretty familiar if you've played many other storytelling games. And the epilogue is, unlike some, freeform. You just say, and then this happened. There's no fiasco-style outcome
table.
It's pretty
bare bones.
Whether you find out whether you succeeded or went on to be miserable for the rest of your days. It's just left to resolve as you see fit. And that's, mechanically, that's the entirety of the game. We should say a little bit about the kind of game we played, and then you can talk about some other highlights of games you've played if you want. You've certainly played or helped others play more than I have. We played a sort of very mythology, a very mythological kind of game, sort of fairy tale, cosmic something. We were playing The Heist, and our players were a motley, our players' characters were a motley crew of villagers and bureaucrats and disgruntled courtiers and others trying to steal song, that is, the mythological force of music itself, back from the sky god Sun King, King of the Sun. It was the King of the Sun. And we eventually succeeded in a dramatic and dramatic struggle that sort of naturally resolved itself in a final challenge. We played, I guess we only played two of the recommended three challenges, right?
Yeah, which we had talked about as a possibility beforehand, because one thing that we did do when we played this game, which was, I think, a little bit of a disservice to the game, was that we extended the amount of players that we had. This game is typically played with 3 to 5 players. It's sort of meant to be played with 3 to 5 players. We played it with 7, which is a lot.
Yeah.
Which we found was a lot.
I have to say, I think compared to a lot of games, it held up very well under 7 players. I think they were seven very good players, 7 players who had all played games at least somewhat like this before and were all very willing to jump in and start acting out scenes and play characters.
No, I definitely think a lot of our players brought their A game, and that helps a lot with that particular rules break. I also do think that this is a game that lends itself to some flexibility with the rules, both because it's pretty bare bones and also because it does depend a lot on the players to be bringing what they need to be bringing to the table.
And that's really something that's true of a lot of storytelling games like this. And I think to some extent, whether this is a game for you is very much a product of the answer to that big picture question about storytelling games. At this point, Follow itself is pretty concise. I'm looking at it here. The playtest rules are 22 fairly sparse pages. If you were trying very hard, you could plus the playsets. If you were trying very hard, you could probably fit all the text on something like 10 pages, but that would be hard to read and hard to follow. I guess my biggest criticism of this game, since I guess I'm just jumping into evaluation here, would be it's doing very little. And that's both good and bad. The main thing it seems to me it's doing is trying to shape a storytelling game for the kinds of plot hooks that you normally associate with a more conventional sort of heroic or action-packed style of tabletop role-playing. If you think about the kinds of quests that are available, and in fact the basic premise that you have a fellowship of characters, well, we've gone right back to the very kind of source material that Dungeons & Dragons was in some way designed to simulate. Now, this is a game about stories, not a game about mechanics and simulation, so it does it in a very different way. But to me, that feels like a bit of an odd match.
Yeah, and one of the things that we have struggled with in a couple of the games that I've played is actually finding our feet in matching ourselves against an adversary. Because one thing that the fellowship really kind of needs to succeed, I think, in a story setting is it needs a strong antagonist. And since none of the players are playing as an antagonist in Follow, one of the few mechanical requirements is that you have to have both of your characters supporting the fellowship, at least at the beginning of play.
Right. And this is a fairly radical departure from some other storytelling games. See basically anything created by Jason Morningstar, where always drive towards conflict between the characters is a central maxim of how to play the game. This presents you with sort of the opposite problem. You're, at least at the start, required to be working together. And that may exacerbate some of the problems of trying to set up good and interesting scenes.
And I think one of the things that doesn't necessarily come through in the playtest rules, but may actually be overall intended in the game, and I don't want to put words in Ben's mouth here, but in my discussions with him previously as a player and a facilitator, one of the things that I know that he likes to see come out is conflict between characters and intra-party conflict. And I think that this game tries to generate some of that in its relationship setup. Its relationship setup is, if you've played Fiasco, is something that you'd be very familiar with, because you set up a series of needs between characters. There is always conflict when there's need.
Right. And I would say those needs, though, there are no other mechanics that bring them directly into play. They're not, in many respects, mechanically important to the game, other than the sort of admonition to consider whether your character is happy with the direction things are going. So it leaves it very much in the player's discretion to decide whether or not the need that you created at the beginning of the game is enough to decide to do something that would otherwise be counter to the interests of the party. It seems to me, and this really didn't come up in our game, that the easiest way to make use of them would be when the mechanics dictate that a character is lost or betrays the party or something like that, which can happen as a result of each challenge. That's source material there that you can go to bring something that's already established back into the spotlight of your narrative and
fit it into
your game.
And I think that that if you're
that
having
sense?
A struggle with who should leave or who should betray, those wants and needs are always useful to bring up and consider. And I think, I think it is relying a lot on players in a way that a lot of story games rely on players, which is to say it provides a series of prompts for the players to use and then relies on them to bring those prompts into play as they see fit. I think a lot of that setup is to get you thinking about what your character wants and what kinds of relationships are useful to even have within the party. Some of the most successful games that I've had, we actually haven't even had a central adversary. We've just generated a lot of party conflict. We didn't win our challenges. We didn't win our quest, but we told a really cool and interesting story that was really engaging and at times very intense. I had a game, the very first game of Fallout that I actually ever played, where we played a superheroes play set, and we didn't do a lot of superheroing, but boy howdy, did we sure get intense. My character ended up divorcing Ben's character, and it was terrible. It was terrible. And also great. It was a really intense moment, and there was some really fun storytelling that went on.
Sounds fantastic. So normally, this is about where we'd start doing, so what would you change about this game? And it doesn't seem totally fair to do that to a game that's still in playtesting. So I think I'll replace that with a, what are you looking forward to in this game, and what do you think this needs in a final or future version? Ben's been known to release updates and rules updates, even, I think, years after a couple of games have been published originally. One just came out for Kingdom. So I think it's fair to talk about that.
I know, and I know he's still working on, like, Kingdom stuff. Like, he's still thinking about that. So one thing I would like to see, and I know that this is actually something that he's working on, so it's kind of a softball, is I would like to see a little more explication of how players should be setting and ending scenes. Because I think with players that are more familiar with story games, that's a very easy thing to understand. But Follow is a game that I could very easily see being picked up by players who don't have a lot of experience. And I'd like to see Playbook give a little bit more to the players in general.
Right. I'm going to jump in here and say that actually, if you're looking for more of that kind of explanation direct from the creator, the Google Plus group that has a lot of playtesters on it and in which he's posting regularly about playtests and the game and further development, has a good bit of what I think might end up being future explanatory text for the rulebook in the form of Q&A with people asking questions and some really good advice about how to play scenes in storytelling games. And given the backlog of content on his blog, I think certainly a lot of good material like that might wind up in the rulebook by the time this is finished.
As a playtester, one thing that I'd like to be able to provide is the sort of blind playing that a lot of players are going to be coming to a game with, because they're not going to be on the Google Plus group and they're not going to be on Ben's blog, which I'm sure is really interesting, but they're not going to be there. A lot of, you know, there's going to be players who are just going to be picking this book up and they're just going to be like, oh, this seems cool. And I'd like to be able to give some of that perspective as a playtester. I think it's valuable to have people come up and just play it blind.
I think that's obviously very valuable in the context of a playtest specifically. I think that gets to a problem in general of evaluating the quality of a game versus evaluating the quality of the rulebook for the game. Because there are certainly games that are brilliant, but only poorly explained, and there are games, we've talked about a few in other real-life conversations, like Apocalypse World, for example, where it's a wonderful game as long as you don't stumble into an area where the rule book is a little bit light on details and then get derailed by an awful question about, so can you blow up the car or not? And things like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, I mean, we've talked in the past about, like, I've played a couple of Apocalypse World games now that have been really fun, except I still don't understand how Harn works. And, like, I've been playing Apocalypse World for a little while now, and every time we've gotten to it, it's just been, like, hand-waved. And I know I could look it up, but, like, it would be nice to have that just there.
And obviously this is an eternal struggle for game creators and game players. I think that wraps up most of what I thought we really needed to talk about. So any further thoughts?
Yeah, I guess one thing that I do really like about this game that brings up the wants, and I know that this is sort of a common mechanic, like this is not necessarily unique to Follow, but I do like the way that it's employed in Follow, is the consequences mechanic of, like, when you as a player think that, and this is something that if you've played Polaris or Archipelago, you're familiar with, when you as a player think that something has been too easy for somebody else, you can actually say, I don't think that's going to be so easy for you, and I want consequences. And I think what's interesting about Follow is that your consequences aren't falling on your character. They're actually falling on someone else's character. And it's a way of generating further conflict in the story, because you not only now have an unmixed success, an unambiguous success on one hand, you have an unambiguous failure on another hand. That's happened to a totally.
That's a good point. I realize we elided that mechanic in discussion earlier, but there's a consequences mechanic. It works much as E.T. just explained.
I really like that, because it does require, it requires you to start thinking on your feet about what would be interesting in the story. And I also do like yelling consequences. Like, that's fun.
Right. And so this is a standard segment that we use to wrap up the podcast, but who's this game for? Who's this game not for? Obviously, this is not for someone who wants a stat sheet with lots of numbers on it.
I would say this game is not for world builders and narrators. It's for role players.
I think that's a very good way of putting it. How accessible to beginners or newbies or people who don't play a lot of tabletop role-playing games or people like that do you think this is?
I think it's medium level accessible. I think if you've played some, you don't have to have played story games before to necessarily enjoy Follow. But I would say that having played some tabletop would be, and having some role playing experience would be useful. I don't think this is a game for somebody who's never played a role playing game before.
And I think I definitely agree, particularly that this would be a good starting point in storytelling games as opposed to traditional tabletop role-playing games. I think actually because of the relative simplicity and sparseness of its mechanics, it's less likely to be deeply confusing to a player than another game. Like, this game is very much what you see is what you get.
Right.
It doesn't have sort of hidden complicated things that only become clear once you've played it a couple of times, which is something that I feel like Fiasco and other games can be guilty of. The first time you sit down and play it, you don't really understand what the rules as such do. And I think this game is a game where it's very clear what the rules do.
Yeah, and I think that the learning curve on this game is beneficial to someone who has a concept of storytelling games but hasn't got a lot of experience with them, just because it you really can play it right out of the gate, not just because it's a prep list game, but because it's, as you said, very much of a what you see is what you get. And the mechanics are simple enough that you can really concentrate on crafting how you want to tell your story.
And you've actually played this with a good number of people who are playing it for the first time, right? So that's not just an off-the-cuff opinion like mine.
No, it's, I mean, like, I've actually, most of the games that I've played have been, I'm introducing this game to people, and almost all of them have ended with a, at least that was fun. You know, it's always been a fun experience for me, and it is pretty easy to explain just so long as you're willing to take some time to step back and think about what's going on. I definitely have made rules mistakes before, but one of the things that I think is really nice about this game is that it's very forgiving of rules mistakes.
Yeah, one rules mistake is not going to derail your gameplay experience. I think we made at least five.
Yeah,
so.
we made plenty of rules mistakes, and we've also deliberately stepped on the rules sometimes.
Right.
Sorry, Ben, right. But I mean, you can, I think you can.
I think we stuck mostly in the spirit of the
right.
game as much as we could.
And that's the thing, is as long as you're willing to give the game a fair shake, it's willing to give you a fair shake. And I think that's not always the case with a storytelling game.
All right. Well, thank you, imaginary listener, for listening to this, a Parallel Lives, possibly mini episode on Follow. I'll record a real ending.
Okay.
Later.
Thanks for having me, Hugh.
Yeah. Thank you for doing this.
For real, thank you so, so much for listening to Parallel Lives, our definitely role-playing game podcast. If you thought that Follow sounded interesting or cool, you're in luck. The game is now out, and you can find it at lamemage.com/follow for $10. If you'd like to find us online, we're at parallelurl.com, parallelpodcast@gmail.com, or the Parallel Lives Tabletop Podcast on Facebook. Review us on Apple Podcasts or Stitcher Radio to help us grow. Also, you might want a zine. More details soon. If you'd like to find us on Twitter, the podcast is at Parallel Chat, and Hugh is at Ionic Blather. To find AT, you'll have to look to the stars. This episode was produced by Hugh, with music by Kevin MacLeod. Check back next week for our take on Time Stories, a board game that you play one time. That episode clocks in at about an hour long.